Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Good morning and welcome to Coffee at KYUK. Today our guest is Alex Nick. He talked with KYUK's Katie Basil about his home village of Ohagamute on the lower Yukon River and how it became abandoned.
What happened was during the Alaska Territorial days, everyone was required to have their children educated or have their children sent to boarding schools. There was an elder who advised against that because he did not want to see Western culture being introduced to the village. And the rationale he was using was that local young men and women would lose their culture. They would also lose their language and their traditional way of life, such as subsistence way of life and how to survive out in the wild. That's what happened. And one of the reasons why it was abandoned was because there was a person by the name of L.E. Ost, O.S.T. He was a preacher in one of the Protestant churches, and he was also a magistrate. What he did was he threatened the parents that they would be thrown in jail unless they move away to where there is an educational facility and get their children educated. That was one of the main reasons why the old village of Ohagamute is abandoned.
When did the last people leave Ohagamute? Was it around 1959 when you left?
The last people who moved out of Ohagamute was probably Boots' family. One of the Boots family who did not have children, his name was Paul Boots. He was the last person to move out of the village. Other family members that moved last out of that village was Isaac's family. Two of the boys are Orthodox priests now, Nick Isaac and Max Isaac. They were the last ones to move out of there. I believe when they're getting close to age where they would be required, the children would be required to attend school. They moved out of that village.
Do you know what year that would have been, roughly?
I would guess that was sometime around maybe 60s, early 60s maybe.
How old were you when you left Ohagamute?
I was about 15-year-old when I was brought to Russian Mission, and I attended Territorial Elementary School in Russian Mission, and I advanced from first grade through halfway through sixth grade in 9 months' time. And my teacher, whose name was Eddie Hooley, he really wanted me to continue education because he saw some potentials in me. But because I came from a poor family, I started working at an early age.
I'm curious about the elder who advised people not to send their kids to school. What you said is that he was afraid people would lose their cultural ways. And I'm curious, do you think that's true? Do you think he was correct?
I see it a lot nowadays, even with my family. My kids don't speak Yupik. They speak English. And one of the reasons why my wife and her siblings don't speak Yupik that well is because Alaska Territorial teachers were very rude to the students. You know, if and when we speak our own language, we would be asked to stand in a corner for 1/2 hour, or we would have our hand whipped by the ruler. until we promise that we won't speak our language again. And because most of the parents back then had pity on their children, they tried to speak to them in English. Even though most parents had broken English, they speak English to their children so they won't speak their own language in the school and get punished for it. That's how it was. Even I was a big kid back then, you know, 15-year-old. I had to have my hand whipped by a ruler, and it hurt. I stood in a corner for speaking my language before I learned how to speak little English back then, and it was very hard, especially for the parents and also grandparents who hear children telling them what happened at school.
You said you were 15 when you left Ohagamiu. What year was that, roughly?
That was about 1958-59 school year. And to tell the truth, it wasn't that easy to shift from Yupik speaking to English. One of the best way that I've learned was after attending elementary school, I bought myself dictionary. I read Holy Bible. I read magazines, newspapers, you name it, whatever I can get my hands on. I read those, and constantly referring to the dictionary to see what each word means. And to be honest, even to this day, my grammar is not perfect because of the pronunciations of the words.
What do you think people should know about Ohagamiu? What do you want people to know about?
People should know that the people from the village of Ohagamiu were forced to move out. They were forced out of that village. And people were not brave enough between then and now to try to reestablish the village because of the cost of educational facilities such as local elementary and high school facilities in the village. I think most villages are fortunate to have high school in their villages because of the Hoots case in the early 80s, I think, or sometime around mid-80s, when the case was won by Smalley Hoots. Villages were allowed to build high schools, and at the time I also served as a school board member in the early 80s, mid-80s. I think that's where opportunity kind of advanced for the local people, so that most children don't have to go out of town to attend high school. As a result of that, I think there were a lot more interest in teaching. My daughter is a teacher. She was teaching here in Bethel for at least a couple of years. She was offered a teaching position in our village, so she took that and now moved back.
In Russian Mission?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's left at Ohagamiu? Like, if I went there, what would I see?
There are very few old structures that are fallen down. There is a church. The church is fairly new church because it was replaced in 1980s by what we call a youth camp group for the Orthodox Church. And there's one structure that was supposed to be community hall that was built about the same time. And there are old fish camps around it, old fallen structures in the area, but there are a lot of growth, like a lot of trees that have grown in this day and age, there's a new tool, they call it satellite imaging, maybe. They could tell how many houses were there. They could tell what was there even before the fallen structures were built.
So using some of those tools, they could kind of remap what the community looks like. And do you ever get to go back? When was the last time you went back?
I used to have fish camp there before I moved to Bethel. Last time I went there was probably at least 10 years, maybe. I used to like to go back there to visit the grave sites of my ancestors and also my mother, my relatives, and the church. There used to be a store there, a trading post there, but it was torn down by the person I mentioned earlier. It was brought to Marshall.
The pastor? The pastor who threatened all the parents?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He built himself a church with part of the materials that he tore down in that village.
Do you know his name?
I know his name.
Would you tell us?
Not to offend anyone, his name was Ludwig E. Ost. He was a pastor and a magistrate. He served as a territorial magistrate in Marshall. He used to take care of his church as well.
What was it like growing up in Ohagamute?
It was peaceful. Everyone was looking out for each other's, and they would help each other's. They would provide for other people who are less fortunate. What I mean by less fortunate is people that did not have any right kind of tools for hunting and fishing. They helped them out. They invite them to summer fish camps, fall camps, and also spring camps to help them get their fur harvested in fall and springtime in order to get what I would call Western supplies. Not native supplies, but Western supplies like basic food from the store, and also basic materials for clothing, like such as the fabric and other stuff. That was how it was. And I consider myself as one of the last nomadic person from that old village, because we moved from that winter settlement to fall camp in fall time, moved back to the winter settlement, which is Ohagamute, and then moved to spring camp in early spring, and moved to summer camp shortly after we moved back to the winter settlement. That's how it was. It was always something to do. And men and women would be very busy getting their tools ready, you know. Men would be making what we call daluyak, fike trap, wooden fish traps, using natural materials such as roots for tying the daluyak, roots of the pine trees, and also very fine fiber from black spruce tree would be used for the materials. And people would make sleds and also harnesses for a dog team. They would also make wooden kayaks or canoes. And they would also make wooden boats. Fortunate people like my dad had windmill, which he used for electricity when it was very windy, and he would charge a bunch of big batteries back then. And when it's not windy, you know, we would still have electricity, you know, from battery-powered lights. Wow. And it was amazing experience to always listen to elders and watch their instructions and try to do their instructions how to built traps and other stuff, you know, on her own. And I can tell you some funny things about that. You know, when we thought we were becoming experts, you know, we would build something and sometime it would fall apart.
What would the elders say when it fell apart?
They never say anything. They never scolded us. They only let us sit down and watch them how they do it, you know, so that it won't fall apart. Mm. And one of the things that's probably appropriate at this point is, you know, when the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act was passed, a lot of people claimed lands. And because I was in the training at the time, my dad claimed land for me in the area where we used to trap. One of the Boots family told me one time, him and his family claimed the whole entire village under, Native Allotment Program, so that it will not be claimed by any, what we call back then, land robbers. This was a local word. That's what that family member didn't want, so he staked the whole village under their family member's name. And as a result of that, my dad's old house, my uncle's old house, and relatives' old houses are within the claim.
So that land is now owned by someone in the Boots family?
Yes, yeah. Huh. Even some of us who were desiring to go back to that village, we can't at the moment. Even if we want to go back and live there, we can't.
Is it because it belongs to the Boots family? Yeah.
Mainly because, there are some rules that we have to respect, such as land ownership.
That must be really hard.
It is. Mm. I can't even build a house on my lot.
Is there any effort to reestablish Ohagamut?
Currently, there is some effort. They're trying to gather some information about how it was. I know there is good possibility it could be reestablished, but it cannot be reestablished in the old village site. It has to be reestablished in the new site where there are no land claims, like Native allotment claims. It's possible. It's very well possible. And I support that too.
That was Alex Nick with KYUK's Katie Basil about how and why the village of Ohagamut on the lower Yukon was abandoned. This is Coffee at KYUK.
Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.